for the immediately appropriate update, the development, excuse me, with regard to the biometric capacity. The development of a biometric capacity at port of entry is complete, and the department has successfully tested the solution to ensure that it is sufficiently robust and able to support core business operations. In view of this successful testing, transit visas are no longer required for persons traveling through Lanseria, Oar Tambo, Cape Town International, and Kinshasa International Airport. Further training continues on an ongoing basis as additional counters and ports have been enabled for biometric capturing. In this regard, Immigration Directive 28 of 2015 was approved on the 18th of December, communicating the decision applicable at Oar Tambo, Kinshasa, Cape Town International, and Lanseria. And transit visas for remaining ports of entry will be re-evaluated after the biometric rollout at such ports. Chairperson, this has been implemented at these ports of entry. We are now able to capture biometrics of travelers traveling into South Africa. We are in the process now of extending it to all the counters, and we should be able to capture all visitors to South Africa on our biometric system. Regarding the accreditation of tourism companies, the National Department of Tourism confirmed that the management of the tourism sector in China is highly regulated, and therefore tourism operators are already accredited by the government. In this regard, on the 28th of January 2016, the National Department of Tourism provided a list of tour operators in China which have been accredited by Chinese state authorities and the National Department of Tourism. On the 29th of January 2016, Minister Kigaba waived the requirement to have to apply for a port of entry visa in person for Chinese travelers traveling as part of a tour group, and thus allowed accredited Chinese tour operators to apply on behalf of such travelers on condition that the biometric data of the traveler will be taken on arrival in and on departure from South Africa. A standard operating procedure that guides the application process was prepared and approved and communicated to all foreign missions and staff. With regard to the issuance of long-term multiple entry visa for a period not exceeding 3 months and up to 3 years, this has already been implemented. Furthermore, our minister announced a 10-year visa waiver for business executives from BRICS countries, and this has also been in existence since December 2014. And this allows such executives to remain in the Republic for 30 days at a time. In line with his commitment to ensure that immigration serves as a vehicle to enhance economic growth, on the 29th of January 2016, the Minister of Home Affairs approved the granting of 10-year multiple entry visas to bona fide business and academics, or academia from Africa, a measure that should have been implemented in the short term, 3 months to a year. So we were able to do this already during the first 3 months. All departmental staff and foreign missions have been informed accordingly. The department has developed a standardized template for school principals to complete, which is available as a download from the departmental website. It developed a standard operating procedure to address these changes, updated its website accordingly, and communicated these changes to relevant staff. School principals are therefore now enabled to provide one affidavit confirming permission for South African children to travel on school tours in lieu of having to provide individual parental consent forms. Chairperson, importantly, and whilst not mandated by the IMC, the department took additional steps to facilitate the travel of South African sports teams abroad. A meeting was held with the Department of Sports and Recreation in January 2016. On the 29th of January 2016, the department received a list of 75 accredited sports federations from the Department of Sports and Recreation. In turn, the Department of Home Affairs prepared individual letters for the identified sports federations, informing them of the agreement between the two departments to facilitate the travel of sports teams abroad on the basis of an affidavit to be provided by the respective federation. This will also assist school sports teams and other sports teams which minors partake to be able to travel out of South Africa without them having to individually have to have consent forms and unabridged birth certificates. The parental consent affidavit has also been extended from 4 to 6 months. An internal directive informing staff of this measure was issued on the 18th of December 2015. In line with this development, the department's website has also been updated. The successful implementation of biometric capturing at port of entry formed the basis for the review of transit visa requirements at these ports. As of the 18th December 2015, the department began exempting travelers transiting through Lanseria, OR Tambo, Cape Town International and Kinshasa International Airport from having to be in possession of transit visas. Departmental officials, foreign missions and airlines were duly informed of the decision. This was welcomed warmly welcomed by SAA chairperson, who in the past said that this had an impact on their on their numbers of people using the airlines to travel to South Africa to other countries. With regard to the issuance of a strong advisory for travelers, the issuance of a strong advisory for travelers accompanied by minors from countries which are visa exempt in order to ensure compliance with unabridged birth certificate related directives did not form part of the IMC 0 to 3 months. However, the matter has been prioritized between the departments. After the consultation with senior counsel, the department decided that the optimal way to implement such an advisory is to amend Regulation 12 of the Immigration Regulations and to frame it to confer powers on an immigration officer to exercise discretion, circumscribed to establish the relationship between the adult and the child. In November and December 2015, consultations were held with the Department of Tourism on the proposed amendment, and the Department of Tourism was requested to provide their comments on the proposed amendment. Consensus on the approach being undertaken by the department was received from the Department of Tourism on the 29th of January 2016. The department will now undertake the prescribed process to amend the regulation accordingly. Chairperson, with regard to a way forward, having implemented all the recommendations made by the IMC that fall within the Department of Home Affairs control, the department will now focus on giving effect to the measures falling in the next phase 3 to 1 year, namely establishing additional visa facilitation centers in Zimbabwe, the United Arab Emirates and Botswana, to consider a visa waiver for India, China, Russia and other countries, to look at issuing visas on arrival for persons traveling to South Africa, having in their passports valid visas for the UK, USA and Canada, or any other country that applies stringent checks on visitors to their countries, to ease travel for tourists, and consider granting a certain category of frequent travelers, that business and academics from Africa, a 10-year multiple entry visa. As I have reported, this has already been done. And open 2 business visa facilitation centers in Durban and Port Elizabeth, in addition to the center that we recently opened in Sandton. And lastly, to print parents' details in their passports so that they do not have to carry birth certificates. We are in the process already. Work is being done on this at government printers, where our civics branch is in consultation with them to have the actual birth certificate printed as a page in the passport. Chairperson, that basically covers this presentation. What follows is just a more in-depth, the slide that follows just shows the different steps that were taken on the objectives that I've already reported on. Chairperson, it's just the committee members will see that it is really just a kind of progress map of where we're going with that. I thank you, Chairperson.
I was told that you're also going to speak to
the travel statistics.
I think we should be able to proceed. This one I think we can leave on the fact that it's just the detailed explanations for the report that we've already received. And I think they should proceed.
Chair, thank you. Just before we proceed to the festive statistics, let me just add 3 things. One is that every travel statistics will indicate, and this is not only confined to the festive season, the region that sends most travelers to South Africa is the African continent. Now, and that will explain our rationale for the 10-year multiple entry visa for African business people and academics, as well as the frequent travelers to South Africa. Those would be identified on the basis of the movement control system. And such people would be notified as and when it is possible of their particularly the frequent travelers, of their qualification for the 10-year multiple entry visa. The trusted traveler visa is also under consideration in the department and will be implemented as soon as we are ready with its development, proper development. And of course, it will not be limited to the peoples of the African continent, but it will most likely, first and foremost, be available to them. Amongst others, the peoples of our region, Southern Africa, Lesotho, Botswana, Mozambique, and countries such as those, given the frequency of the travel of some of their nations, sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes on a weekly basis, to South Africa. One of the steps we have taken with regard to the Lesotho, which entails not stamping their passports whilst we will continue reading them through the movement control system, is aimed at already laying the ground towards a trusted traveler visa and freeing movement. Because one of the challenges that the peoples of Lesotho, and I'm sure this would apply also to those of Botswana, of Mozambique, Swaziland, and even Zimbabwe, is that because of the frequency of their travel between South Africa, their passports, when you stamp them at each instance of passage through a photo entry or exit. They get full quickly. And then we impose on them the obligation to have to reapply, to renew their passports, to apply for new passports, which is quite costly to them. But the same would apply to South Africans who have related relatives in these neighboring countries, who also travel frequently between our two countries. And so we are working on ways to ease that movement, amongst others, between South Africa and Botswana at Tsidi Lamlomo. We've introduced the community border crossing, which is, in some ways, a trusted traveler movement mechanism. Because we've introduced biometric capture, people get pre-registered. It's confined to the people of that area between South Africa and Lesotho. They cannot travel beyond the 200-meter radius. 20 kilometer radius, which means for people who have to cross the border to visit their relatives or go to school, they can within that 20 meter radius between both countries and use that community border cross. Because at times, if you are at Tsidi Lamlomo and you have to enter South Africa through a normal port of entry, you must travel about an hour or two to a normal port of entry. What was therefore introduced there is a community border crossing with immigration officers. It's an integrated service. It's an electronically managed service that facilitates movement between the people of our countries in that community. We have done research on this, and we are going to roll it out to various other areas which were identified by the research, which will further enable movement between the peoples of our countries and assist towards the development of the trusted traveler visa. Secondly, one of the concerns which has been raised with us, because what the IMC decided was that one, South Africans traveling abroad with children must continue carrying an agreed birth certificate. Secondly, that the letter of consent is still required. It must be valid for a period of 6 months, after which it lapses, so that it must be renewed again. The concern has been particularly from single parents, that in instances of breakups, sometimes the other partner becomes hostile and intransigent. They refuse to sign the letters of consent, and sometimes they just simply disappear. Now, obviously, the department in that instance cannot say, therefore, in that regard, we waive the regulations, because the regulations must apply to everyone. And what we have therefore advised the parents is that they must seek a court interdict from the High Court, which has jurisdiction over children, so that once we have that court decision, we can now, on that basis, issue permission for a child to travel abroad. In part, we are informed in this regard by the fact that we have a number of cases of parents whose children have left the country without their consent, and in some instances, some of the parents have taken action against the department, asking us to explain in court why we allowed their children to leave the country without their permission. The court order therefore assists us, it gives us the cover we need for that parent to travel with their child. But in conversations with the Department of Justice and Social Development, we are exploring the possibility of rather using family advocates to provide us with that order that would assist us, that would enable us to allow parents to travel with their children. But they are still considering the matter. I don't know, Dion, how far that those discussions are. Maybe Dion can comment on it, because that too contains some risks that we would need to be sure that they are properly covered. Because after all, a family advocate is not a court. And they do not have the power of a court. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm sure Dion can provide. We were just trying in this instance to assist three parents who are complaining about because sometimes when relations break up, the relations between the parents become hostile. But the Department of Home Affairs can't be dragged into private family matters. It cannot be our responsibility, but we need to find ways to assist the parents, both the ones that would not have given consent not to have their children taken out of the country, often permanently without their consent, as well as those who wish to travel with their children on holiday, to be able to do so without the inhibitions imposed by the unwilling parent. Obviously, in relation to the schools, the sports associations, we've taken care of it as we went beyond the decisions of the IMC to communicate with the sports bodies that if, for example, a rugby union recognized by the South African Rugby Union is to travel with kids abroad for sports and they are coming back, the affidavit from the sports association itself would be sufficient, or from the federation would be sufficient for us to enable, to allow the children to leave the country. We were trying to assist because we also would have a number of parents who complained that their children have got important academic programs abroad, they must travel with a school or to go play abroad, but can't because the parents are fighting and one of the parents is refusing to sign an affidavit. But we are working with the Department of Justice and Social Development to try and find a solution. This would work without requiring a court order, but this would also protect us, because somebody who wants to do crime don't have to report that I now want to do crime and take this child out of the country for good. They will not do that. That would be very courteous of them, but people won't do that. So we need to give ourselves enough cover to ensure that no person can take a child out of the country without the consent of the other parent, whether on a temporary or permanent basis. Having said that, Chair, we will clarify it later during the discussions, but let's, with your permission again, allow McKay to present on the travel system.
Minister, I've just reviewed that decision that we proceed. I've just reviewed it now as you were presenting. But you say the member must have an opportunity to speak to the policy, because the statistics is consequence of the implementation of it. At least they must actually talk whether they are satisfied on progress made on the implementation of the first. And if they have got a reservation, they must say so. Because that is the statistics is a product of this. And on that score, I just wanted to proceed to say, honorable members, the presentation has been made, and it looks like seriously progressive. Seriously progressive. And then the next presentation, which Mr. McKay did not proceed into, is the one that actually has put it in talks. I wanted us to go to that one. The one that followed this presentation. The one that started the talk with objective one biometrics. Because it's actually talking the narrative that he has made, and the minister has also spoke to. The first one, the first objective of biometrics, then the department is saying that they have met that one. Is there any comment on that specific one? On this specific one?
We have three numbers.
Yes, page 10.
Yeah, mine is good. Page 10.
Page 10, you see the objective one, biometric.
Then implementing the health sharing of bioelectric gas bottles and you start in your pilot and Australia, over Tambo, Kushaga, and Cape Town Airport. Then after the pilot, the signal says the objective
has been met on that pilot project. Yeah. Are we happy? If there is a comment, then can you have those two comments?
Chairperson, thank you very much. May I just say that I have a few questions to raise on this, and I want to get your clarity because I suspect that you're trying to manage a discussion page by page, which is going to be very difficult. I appreciate and admire the fact that you've reviewed your decision to allow us to ask questions, and I'm grateful it didn't take an IMP to get you to change your view. But please, with your permission, if you allow me to raise one or two points on the immigration regulations, and then I'm out of your hands.
I would have asked them to complete this objective as they stated. You know, if you were for the issue of the specific objective, that I just raised that one. Then at the end, if you want an opportunity to get some sort of a broad questions issue, and then I think we should be able to do so.
My concern is that if you're going to do it that way, we're going to be very limited for time, and I'm not going to get an opportunity to raise some of the questions and the points that I'd like to raise. So I'll deal with the biometrics now, as best as I can. But I do want to make a comment first on the biometrics. Shepard, more than 2 years ago, we had this conversation in this portfolio committee about the immigration regulation. The Honourable Minister will remember quite clearly that about 2 years ago, he was kind enough to allow a meeting, myself and him, on the very issue about the biometrics and a number of other immigration impacts of other aspects of the immigration regulations in his office. And 2 years ago, we said at that stage that this thing is going to create a problem. It wasn't just me who said it, it was the entire country who was saying it, and the entire tourism industry of the world who was saying it. And in that very document, the solution was there, 2 years ago, capture biometrics on arrival. It's still in that document.
Can I apologize on that? No. Let me just apologize to you because you are doing what we have agreed that you are going to do with the other hand. This is not apologizing. This is at a moment that the objective says they are including a pilot at Australia or Tambo, Kinshasa, and Cape Town Airport. Then they say that they have met these. Now that's the only issue that I wanted to ask you. And then I heard that they say they have met on the pilot at this particular airport. The other narratives about the history
and the rest of the biometrics issue, I know you've got issues with that. But on this one, are we agreeable? Do we accept that they have met? Is there anybody that has got experience that now has to take out, there is no biometrics? And that's what I just wanted to say. Are we agree with them on what they are saying, it is that they are met or they have not met? Then when you are finished, then you will have this general question on whatever is the argument that you may have had. Yes, we are just trying to tick boxes, tick or cross.
For now.
So I'm going to assist you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tick all boxes. No, I'm ticking all the boxes.
Let's
put my name there first. When you give me an opportunity, I want to raise this thing. Otherwise, you're not going to allow me to do my job.
Okay. So now you are raising about the
I'm ticking all the boxes.
The
and then come back and give me a chance.
Okay.
I'm ticking the first box.
Okay.
With the hope that you are going to get it in.
Okay.
The minute that I have not given such, it does not have time to engage with us, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, we are not in jail. That's what happened. So, I just want to check with the EDG and the minister because of the implementation. Obuchi, I think if I'm not mistaken, it was last week when the department was making a presentation in the Verstappen Protocol Committee, and then with admitters, of course, related to this issue as well. So they are experiencing some network problems. So now, since this pilot project has taken place to those big airports, are we not having those network problems as such? And then if you do, how the department is handling it?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the Minister for the DG and his team who are here today. I'll take a note, Chairperson, that when it comes to this biometric capacity in this airport, it is said to be complete. Apart from what Honorable Sobe has stated as the challenge, what other challenges have been noted, if there are any? Because you see, Chairperson, one says, in view of the successful testing, one thinks that there aren't any challenges. But some of the challenges might be challenges which we did not expect, but they are happening. And I would also like to ask my second question on this one here, which is the re-evaluation after the biometric rollout at other ports. Which other ports are agency in need of these biometric testing, and how long is it going to take until when we've actually covered all the areas where we feel that we definitely need this biometric capacity in this sense?
Thank you very much. And then in the absence of Sadiq Mehd.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the Department of Home Affairs and the Minister. Now, in fact, let me first state that I think I appreciate the move of the Department, the move of the government, in making sure that all the stakeholders agree on this issue of immigration. Having said that, and coming from Home Affairs, I think the issue of security has always been to be taken into account, and the vehicle that we use is biometrics, and we are always taking account of biometrics. So I think I agree that this has been done satisfactorily, but I'll go back to the question of asked by Honorable Sophia, the question of SIM-tag computers being down. How have we sorted that one out? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. On this one, I think this is very clear, the network problems, and as well as because you say you have met this one, how are we then rolling out to our international airports? And then what are the time frames? I think those are the most serious questions. Objective two, on, my document is not helping me, but appointing accredited tourism operators and look at introducing an accredited tourism company program for China, India and Russia only. Then it is on track. China immediately confirmed India and Russia require further assessment. And this is work in progress. This is an intention they are looking at introducing this accredited tourism company program then for China, India and Russia. Is there anyone who wants to have any comment on that? Let's talk.
Yes, sir. Maybe the department will tell us because they are looking at the data of China. Since it's now is working properly, what does that mean? And then when what is the timeline on the phone? And this is a political question. I hope the minister will answer it because last time you suppressed it when I asked the department. Since the minister said today I'm covered. When I look at the document, minister, when I see China in Russia, I thought Brazil will form part of it.
Yeah.
But I can see that the BRICS is coming later. So now my political question is that how did we come up with this China, India, Russia? And then if the concept or the approach was to deal with BRICS countries, why the Brazil is not here? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Any other one? Member?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what's important here is that one looks at this BOS, which is the standard operating procedure that is there. How much of it has been rolled out in which countries in this time frame? That means that after China and Russia, which other countries are also noted, and when is it going to be rolled out? So that should actually ensure that we get an understanding of which other countries will be following, when and how. Thanks.
Okay. No, thank you.
Thank
you very much. And I'm sure the minister will talk to the why Brazil is excluded and which other countries are earmarked, and then I think that, but I'm sure it's at the end. It has been indicated that for not completing, India and Russia require further assessment. Probably that is what is frustrating the end date. Objective number three, to give long-term multiple visa, multiple entry visa. To give, consider a long-term multiple entry visa for a period exceeding 3 months and up to 3 years for frequent travelers, for business meetings, business people, and academics. This objective has been met. Are we clapping hands for this having been conceptualized? Maybe. Then objective number four, and then principals will issue letters for travel on school tours, and also to be extended to professional accredited sport bodies, you know, to be able to grant permission even in the case of children that are traveling with them, so that we avoid individual affidavit and letters from parents. It makes sense? Accepted and supported.
Okay.
Objective number five, it is nice to work with you. It's very nice. Objective number five, to extend the validity of the parental consent affidavit to 6 months. It is helpful. This is helpful that a parent that has actually been concerned that it does not expire immediately. Right, thank you very much. And then objective number six, to re-examine transit visa requirement in line with the port of entry biometric enhancement. And then, do we have anything here to say? They actually want to re-evaluate the transit visa requirement in line with the new port of entry now is the biometric that is in place. Do we have it? Okay. Objective 7, the issuance of a traveler advisory. An advisory note, I think. And I think it is to those countries that do not require visa to travel this side for parents that are accompanied by minors to be advised on the requirements of, I think, of the country as they come. This is progressive, it's helpful, I think, so that everybody knows exactly what is expected. Then objective number 8, then this talks to the stakeholder engagements. They are actually engaging all the relevant stakeholders that have interest in the work that the department is doing in relation to the visa regime. We should encourage this to happen frequently and as much as is possible, so that those that need to know and also need to actually input in any issue that has been conceptualized for improving the system, then they should be able to make those specific inputs. We should welcome this one. Okay. Now, those few questions that have been raised, Honorable Minister and Mr. McKay, they are not many. I think they are hardly three, not four. So questions, can you have responses to that?
Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, Chairperson, through you. I I suppose that the issues raised by Honorable Hussein are still going to be dealt with. Thank you. The question regarding the networks at the port of entry, our port of entry used a large network, which is why there is a distinction between the network used at our front offices, which is supplied by CETA, and the more reliable network that is used at ports of entry supplied by SARS. And that's the reason why we are not having problems with regard to the network itself. The challenge is that at some point last year we were experiencing, for example, at your Maseru border post, port of entry, related to old computers. It was a problem of the hardware itself that we were dealing with, which we have attended to and are in the process of attending to. But the network itself is more reliable, more stable at the ports of entry, and we are experiencing no problem. We were a bit concerned when we introduced the biometric capture, and we went to OR Tambo to witness how it was operating, worried that there could be delays in processing people capturing their biometrics, but it doesn't take even 2 to 3 minutes to capture the biometrics and process the person. And the advantage with the biometric capture that we use in South Africa at Home Affairs is that we capture 10 of your fingerprints and store them, so that for your subsequent visit we will use any one of your fingerprints, because we stored your biometrics into our data bank. We also have a system to assist those who are physically disabled, that is, who do not have hands. So our system is advanced enough to be able to cater for all situations. The cabinet has decided that this we should do, and fortunately we were already on course to implement this biometric capture system, regardless of the resource challenges that we are experiencing in this regard. And that's why we've not been able to roll it out immediately to all the ports of entry. We had to start with international efforts, given the volume that they deal with. And because we had prioritized the introduction of the biometric capture and immediately the annulment of the requirement for the transit visa. And that's why we started with the ports of entry, introduced it at the 4 ports of entry, Liberia, Cape Town, Kinshasa, and OR Tambo International Airport, and moved speedily to extend, to roll out to more counters at each one of these ports of entry, so that we can deal with as many volumes as possible, particularly during the festive season. The other ports of entry are being prioritized for the coming financial year. And once we've developed our rollout plan and detailed it, we will then indicate. Obviously, we would look at just that most of the transit travelers use the airport rather than the ports of entry. But we do acknowledge that there would be those who transit through South Africa using land ports of entry, and we will target and prioritize the ports of entry in that regard, looking at ports of entry such as Bay Bridge, the bigger ones. Having said that, Honourable members will remember that during the budget vote, we indicated that we will be appointing a transition advisor who has been appointed to advise us on the complete physical and systems infrastructure overhaul at 6 commercial land ports of entry in order to upgrade them to international standard, but above everything else to assist South Africa to ease movement between our country and our neighbors, ease the movement of commercial vehicles, to facilitate trade, reduce crime and corruption, and ensure that we provide better experience for our clients traveling through those ports of entry. Because challenge, if you were to look at your big bridge, Maseru, Fixberg, Oshu, Kwafontein, Khobla Bridge, is that we've done all the level of facelifting you can do at those ports of entry. You now need new physical infrastructure in order to make Bay Bridge an efficient facilitator of movement and trade. You need a complete physical infrastructure overhaul. You need to introduce new systems, because even the systems that we have now cannot be optimized until we have overhauled the physical infrastructure at that port of entry. And the same would apply to Maseru, port of entry, and others. So the transaction advisor has started work to develop the plans. Hopefully, in due course, we will be able to discuss with National Treasury on the infrastructure implementation, the funding solution for such infrastructure implementation, and actually commence with the real work, knowing how long it will take to actually just completely redesign these 6 commercial land ports of entry. So this work that we are undertaking at the present moment is still within the constraints of inadequate physical infrastructure in particular, which we hope in due course we will be able to address. With regard to the accredited tourism companies, the decision was that we will target the tourism companies from the BRICS countries. Now, Brazil would not fall into this category because Brazil has a visa waiver with South Africa. So you don't need to accredit their tourism companies. Brazilians don't need a visa to come to South Africa. They have a 30-day visa waiver. That's why we were to prioritize India, China, and Russia. As we have indicated, China was easy because there are tight regulations in terms of tourism companies. We are still awaiting the Department of Tourism to come back to us with regards to tourism companies. They need to be accredited from India and Russia, because they can't be our decision. We have to be advised by the Department of Tourism which are the companies. The same would apply when we talk about giving a 10-year multiple entry visa to a business person. It can't be Home Affairs that decides that, okay, you are a business person. We are awaiting advice from the Department of Trade and Industry, so that an entrepreneur, a business person, is properly defined, and therefore we can better manage. I mean, you can't say to me that somebody who sells cigarettes in their country also deserves a 10-year multiple entry visa and classified as a business person at the same level as somebody who is a big mining or whatever other investor. So the relevant departments are to advise us, and we are in constant consultation with the Department of Tourism, Trade and Industry. They are working around the clock to ensure that they provide us this information, and as soon as they do, we should be able to make announcements to them with regards to the same arrangements we've made with regards to China. So, as to which other countries are earmarked, Honorable Ngomo, we have not earmarked any except the BRICS countries as advised by Cabinet. And once we've sorted those ones out, we will then look at what other countries can we add. Now, the situation may even be overtaken by the fact that, especially take Russia for example, it can even be overtaken by the fact that we are to sign a visa waiver agreement with Russia. So there might not be any need to even accredit tourism companies from Russia once you have a visa waiver agreement with Russia. Because having looked at everything else, we are satisfied that Russia qualifies for a visa waiver. We are in discussions with India about the same. And so we will then start looking at other countries that are sending us large numbers of tourists that would require their tourism companies to also be accredited. We will work with the Department of Tourism towards that effect. I think, Chair, we have dealt with the question. I don't know if Mr. McKay would want to add any additional information with regard to the rollout of the biometric capture in the ports of entry to provide further details.
Yeah, I think you may provide some further details, even whether have they experienced, you know, it's a big contingent, you know, it's where you've got an aircraft of 200, 300 people coming in. How is your officers for the biometrics affected? And what is other considerations that you need to do to accommodate those people while they're queuing for these biometrics? For those that come in big groups at the same time, what are the arrangements and what are the plans for accommodation and all that in those specific areas? But of course, we just need to be also ascertained with all said and done about processes of facilitating for people to come in and out, is security of the country held at the highest point within all these actions that we are taking? We just need to do some confirmation of that. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm going to ask the Minister to quickly respond to the other issues. On the issue you raised, indeed, currently we are taking biometrics of the groups coming from China, the tour groups coming from China. What we do and the standard operating procedure that we have is that the mission would advise us in terms of how many groups are coming on which flights and at what time are they landing. Now, based on that, we are able to make contingency plans at the airport to receive such flights and those groups. So, and also they give us the number of people in the group. Then we are able to channel them to these counters at OR Tambo when they land. Where we would have problems is if we would have four or five groups landing at the same time whilst we are not rolled out to all of the counters. But currently we are able to manage it because we are able to, and we have foreknowledge, we are able to plan, and we are able to get the necessary resources to deal with them when they land. And also we have told the tour operators to speak to their clients that because we are implementing this, that the time taken at the port of entry will be a bit longer than necessary and than ordinary. Because what we've had when we just implemented this, people would travel to OR Tambo and then have within an hour flight Cape Town and a connective flight. So what we have done now is we've said to the tour operators, you've got to give yourself about 2 to 3 hours time for a next connecting flight. Now, in the case of South Africa, that's not unreasonable because there's a flight every 2 hours to Cape Town. So what they are doing now is they are doing finer planning in terms of moving from OR Tambo and getting a connecting flight to other areas and we are constantly working on that, Jefferson, to see that we don't have people missing their flights and that we are able to do that line of planning. With regard to the issue on biometrics, Jefferson, and the main issue of the security, national security of South Africa, we must be clear, Jefferson. It is imperative that we take biometrics at our ports of entry. It is not something new. Our document managing immigration through a risk methodology that we compiled around 2009 already spoke about the need of biometrics at our ports of entry. But this needs to be clear that it needs to be in conjunction with other measures that you take. It does not obviate the need for you to appear in person when applying for a visa to come to South Africa when you require a visa. Because there's a lot of checks that needs to be done in terms of getting the or establishing the bona fides of a traveler. So firstly, you would need to know, do you have enough, do you have a return ticket? Where are you going to stay in South Africa? You need to make an assessment if this is a potential overstay or someone that's not going to return back to his country. You need to do assessments around the security of the person in consultation with the other immigration authorities or security sector authorities in that particular country. So there's a whole range of checks that you need to make. Now, so, Jefferson, it is still a requirement for you to report at a port of entry. But in this case, we are able to allow tourists to travel to South Africa without appearing at a mission is because we have now transferred that risk over to the travel company. We now expect the travel company to check that there's a return ticket. We now expect the travel company to check that the person has enough money to sustain himself whilst he or her is in South Africa. And it is now the responsibility of the travel company to ensure that the person that comes in leaves the country again before his visa or stay expires. So all of that risk is now on the travel company. Should they not do that, they will be removed as an accredited company and all their clients will have to go and apply for visas in future. So we expect them to do all of these necessary checks for tourists to come to South Africa. In that case, we now allow them to travel to South Africa to use, and we take the biometrics at the port of entry. So the reason why you go to a mission is not only for biometrics. It is to assess your bona fides as a good traveler coming to South Africa. And that needs to be kept in mind because it is a national security imperative. It is not only South Africa that does it, all countries that have a credible immigration system does that chairperson. So I thought I would say, so we do take care of the national security imperatives. Chairperson, let me just use them as an example. Yesterday, a family comes in at Oa Tambo. The family is inadmissible. Immediately, I'm sitting with a court order that says to me, allow these persons into South Africa. The court order is there. The court order says these persons will not return back. They will come into the country, and you need to admit them into the country. The court does not know why they are being refused. The court does not know the circumstances behind that. So you can see the risk of people just pitching up at our port of entry, and we take their biometrics there without checking their bona fides from where they travel from. It would be very difficult when they land in South Africa and they are inadmissible, Jefferson, to then be able to take a decision to return them back. Fortunately, in this case, in conclusion, tourists are a low risk and we can pass that risk back to the company that assists them. Thank you, Jefferson.
I'm not sure whether we got this specific one saying clear. You're saying the family arrived yesterday. And again at the same time already there's a court order that you must accept them. Is that what you have heard? Or the family arrived earlier?
No, Chairperson, if I can use, and this normally happens at our ports of entry, especially our airport of entry. We would have a family, and that
I think, Chairperson, you could say that it makes us think that we have smugglers, people smugglers, or what is the traffickers involved in this? Because the person lands at the port of entry, he's still on the international side, has not entered into South Africa yet. The person refused entry because he does not satisfy entry requirements. As we are still dealing with this person, then we have been refused entry and added him back to the airlines. We find that somebody in South Africa, a lawyer, has already gone to port and says we have a person there at OR Tambo that is being refused entry. Or that the court should order that this person be allowed into the country. So those are the dilemmas that we face in terms of not people just arriving and being either granted visas on arrival or this having taken, or them not going to our missions for them to be pre-checked as well.
Okay.
I'm just raising that as an example.
Okay. No, it is clear. It is clear that what you're saying is that there are people that travel fully knowing that they don't qualify or satisfy to be accepted and pre-arranged, you know, for an illegal intervention. Honorable members, John, you want to add something?
Sorry, I just want to based on what the minister indicated, the discussions we had with the family, and there was a meeting that took place, it works last week already, with the family, so it's still underway and what we're going to do. Just to indicate to the committee that the role of the family advocate is to prepare a report that would go to court usually, where the court has been satisfied that investigations have gone on and were done in order to satisfy the court that the necessary requirements have been met and that the spouse or whatever the case may be in this regard is saying difficult to give consent, etc. So what would then happen is the court steps into the shoes of the parents that is refused, because the court is the upper guardian of all minor children. So if we want to see how we can do it in a less, not too expensive as well, because to approach the High Court is also expensive. So we're trying to see how we can navigate through this with the involvement of the family advocate in this regard, the Department of Justice. So it is still under discussion, Chair. Thanks.
It is work in progress. And the discussion that you wanted to present, Honorable Hussein and yourself, do you want to do it now or we receive the statistics first?
Now.
Okay, and then can we agree that we allow you 3 full minutes and say exactly what you want to say? Because, I mean, generally, what I've heard is that you wanted to say almost things that you have said in the past. Mm-hmm. You want to repeat?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's, can we give you full 3 minutes, then followed by a story?
No.
Want the opportunity. I think one that will want. But as long as we just might report that, like any other day, you will always have challenges of time.
Okay.
You are afforded the opportunity to
okay. I don't want to be difficult with you. But I also not going to allow you to be difficult with me. So I came here to speak, and I'm sorry I'm not going to agree to this thing about 3 minutes, because you will speak for more than 5 minutes yourself. And you're the chairperson. So give us...
Can I ask you to start?
Yeah, but I want to put it on record that you're not going to...
You can take the rules like others that are willing to take the rules. But ordinarily in any other meeting, then the norm usually for others also to be able to manage time. The norm is about 3 minutes. But now I'm saying to you is that speak for the 3 minutes. If you decide just simply to just go non-stop, we are used to that. Okay.
But I thank you for your
seniority and the orderliness.
Okay. I respect the position.
You
I appreciate
it.
It's a point of order.
Okay.
We have our minutes actually in the minister.
Yes.
Can we just move away from the minister of discussion so that we actually use the honor?
Yes.
And
Can I continue? I'm not here to give honor for the minister. I'm here to hold the minister accountable. I'm going to do that job. Chair, may I just say this upfront? Firstly, I think that we must be fair and accept that the department has made some strides which are acceptable. And I give full recognition for that. I mean, given all of the problems that we've had with the immigration regulations, I really am encouraged by the fact that there's been a genuine attempt to try and undo some of the damage that has been done. And I want to put that on the record, Honourable Minister, to you, Chairperson. But the point that I want to make, and I say this with the greatest of respect, is the point that I tried to make earlier. And it made it even worse after I hear what Jackie Madea said, that since 2009, this plan has been on the table about biometrics. So you've known about it since 2009 and nothing has been happening. Now, Chair, I'm referring specifically to this question that I asked to the Minister and to the Department in this room on one occasion when you introduced VFS as the intermediary for visas. And I said, but why is it that people have to go through VFS? And you said, well, because they have to capture their biometrics. That's why they have to go there personally. They can't send the documents via post like the way it used to be done before. And we need them to capture the biometrics. That's why you must go there personally. And it's at that point I said, but why can't you capture the biometrics on arrival? There was an excuse for that. I was shocked to hear from Mr. McKay that this was a plan since 2009. And I'd really like to know what have you been doing with this plan since 2009. Because ever since then, we've caused massive damage to the tourism industry. And I'm sorry if my words are really harsh and strong, but that's reality, because that's what's happening on the ground. Chair, the entire country... fine, I'm making the point that I want to make it very clear. I know that the Minister and Mr. McKay has been at pains to try and present these innovative changes by FIPS. I appreciate the attempts of the security. I mean, I understand that the Department of Home Affairs has to place priority on security. But you equally have to balance it out with the other interests as far as tourism is concerned. We're not the only country in the world that has to worry about security. There are other countries with even greater security problems than we have. But yet they are still able to attract even far greater numbers of tourists than we have. Why? It's because the department itself has given all sorts of mixed messages. On the date that we've introduced the immigration regulations, there was a stop-start process. It was first introduced, then withdrawn. Then introduced, and then withdrawn. And notwithstanding all of the outcry that you had for tourism companies, from members of parliament, from people who are in the know in the industry, the minister and his department refused to listen. In fact, the minister is on record of saying the immigration regulations will not change. And today we see the changes here, 2.5-3 years later, that it had to take an inter-ministerial committee to make these changes, at great cost to the country, at great damage to our reputation in the tourism industry. And the question I want to ask the minister is, what are you going to do about repairing that damage, communicating it to the public that this is exactly what is required from you, so that we can put an end once and for all to the confusion around the immigration regulations? Chair, the second question I want to ask the minister is, and I appreciate that there's been some work now being done understanding what the background and the impact of these things are, hence you have this changes from the immigration inter-ministerial committee. I appreciate that the changes are coming. But with all the money that we are spending on this department and the senior officials in this department, we spend millions of them. Why couldn't you figure this out even beforehand? Do an impact assessment, do a study on what this thing is going to, what's going to happen if you do this. It doesn't take a lot to do that. And then we would have saved ourselves an enormous amount of reputational damage. We would have saved ourselves lots of trouble to tourists that are being caused up until today. But there's lots of confusion out there. So just explain, why did the department do an impact assessment at all? And if it did, what was the outcome of that impact assessment? Did it not show this up that we're going to have the problem? Chair, I want to ask this question around printing the passport details, the parents' details in the passport. And perhaps that's a step in the right direction for the long term. But on the short term, what do you expect people to do? Have reapply for their passports now? And how long is that going to take? And because that sends out some confusion. To every parent who wants to travel, who's got children, must now apply for new passports so that the parent's name can be printed in the passport. And I think you need to be very clear about that so that there is not even any further confusion out in public. their parents are sitting there with passports now, they told us, with no details of the parent in it, and they don't know what exactly they should do, and we don't want to end up with a flurry of new applications. I appreciate, Chairperson, the department's recognition of the cost as far as court orders are concerned for single parents. You can imagine it's an enormously difficult position to be in as a single parent when you are able to save some money for 2-3 years and want to take a child on a holiday, and now you have to be faced with a massive legal bill just to even get a court order. And I've had a number of parents who came to me in this situation. I understand the position that the department is facing. And I appreciate the fact that you're making a step to try and find the easier way for parents to do this. So I have two questions for you on that. How long is this thing going to take before you can communicate to parents, single parents out there, that this is the process that you can follow and this is the easiest way of being able to do this? And Chair, on that point of the affidavit, what is this thing called? A letter of consent. Is it parent consent affidavit? How do you know that if the father, if it's the missing father, or the divorced father, and the mother is the child, how do you know it's for sure that that's the person that's issuing the affidavit? Because I hear a number of stories of affidavits being presented to the department. Can I just ask a very bad question? And the minister alluded to the point that the courts expect the Home Affairs to come and explain in courts about how is it that you release the child from the country. I understand that that's the position to be in. But has there been a situation where the court has ordered, taken an order against the Department of Home Affairs, a cost order, or asked you to return that child to the country? I'd really like to know what exactly are you being held responsible for when it comes to those specific court orders. Because if you explain it in further detail, we'll understand what the position the department is in and the position that you're trying to defend. Okay, thank you very much. I apologize if I've gone for 3 minutes, but I'm really giving you some extra time.
No, you try to speak within this. You have 2 minutes and 58 seconds.
And I use up the other 3.
Yes. I appreciate that and accept the historical part of it. There were progressive questions that you have asked that will actually power us. If we get the answers, then his department is ready. Honorable Sabe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. No, I just wanted to start with the issue of multiplying 10-year visa for Africa. I think this is very progressive, Minister. I think we must not just not say anything. It's very, very progressive. Of course, as Africans, we must take care of one another and must empower one another as African states. But the decision that you took on the 29th of January, Minister, to waive the requirement to apply for a port of entry visa and payment for Chinese travel, I know Buti, you have the presentation you spoke about the effectiveness of the Chinese government. That's why we want to introduce the similar program here in South Africa. But I think we are doing too much for China now, because China seems that they are very good in terms of managing those tourists and tourism in China. They just want to implement as it is. I think we must say something, we must have something just as the Department of Home Affairs or Department of Tourism, just to have a person to oversee the process. We must not just trust China. That's why China has come with the Mandarin as a subject in South Africa, because they know that we love them too much. That's one. I think that decision, I think Minister must review it. Otherwise, we can provide us with some other answers. Minister, on this thing of an upgrade certificate and those proposals from the department, I think I concur fully with Honorable Hussein. This is going to be very expensive. And as a person who is grounded on the ground, you know very well, it's not going to be very easy. And I think as a department, as a leader of a department, as a minister, we must approach this thing because we know this is a societal problem. I think one of the proposals later I will come with is that maybe you can talk to the Minister of Social Development with her programs there, because she is the one dealing with the issue of children without fathers and so on and so on. Because we must not take words for those fathers. We find that in other families, the father is missing.
is missing. That's why the mother has gone and applied for social grants, because there's no father. But the minute when I got a good job, and now I have failed to take my child away for a holiday, the father comes in. And then he's going to the Department of Home Affairs, stressing the Department of Home Affairs, while the mother was absent. We know we're storing those things each and every day, especially when the father is absent from the onset of child. So I think to take the route to approach the court, I think we are not going to do justice with our people. We must explore other means.
And that word.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me first thank our government for securing an inclusive approach to immigration. Immigration has been a source of many risks in our society, and people have complained, the ordinary people have complained around the porousness of our borders and so forth. That the department is doing something to make South Africa less porous, more secure, more safe, when we see where we feel safer as residents and of South Africa, I think that is a great stride in the right direction. But the main thing is that the government has managed to have an inclusive stakeholder approach. Secondly, the Department of Home Affairs has a mandate to manage the borders of South Africa, to make sure that undesirable activity do not happen as a result of porousness of our borders. But because the government cannot, the Department of Home Affairs cannot cater for other departments, we do expect teething problems. And then the teething problems have arisen and they are attended to. And therefore, I think that is good from our government. We cannot keep on looking at the past problems and forgetting to make our future brighter and better. And then from tourism, there is a concern around the airlines that still require unabridged certificates despite the measures that have been put in place. The management of communication appears not to be to be optimal, and I think that area needs more attention. And secondly, the issue of skills in tourism, and particularly around management and the necessary product development, I think needs to be taken into account, and as part of the inclusive stakeholder approach, I think that is to be on board. But otherwise, thank you very much for the sincere effort and for an effort that is showing to be having fruit. Thank you.
Gumara Fuj.
Thank you very much to the Minister and even the Department for making and putting systems in place, which I believe those systems, when they were designed, it was a process, and you saw which was correct and which was not correct. And really, we thank you, because it's a process. And you know, being in this committee, I think that it's not really an easy committee, because it is really it's dealing with critical and sensitive issues about the safety of us as South Africans, and even the safety of those tourists that, you know, people are talking so much about. But I believe really, we really thank you for really implementing those systems, because it was not an easy thing. We cannot really be excited having numbers of tourists in this country, and whereas their security are not in, you know, it's been jeopardized. So we are thankful that we are ensuring that ourselves as Africans and also as the tourists that will be coming in this country will be safe. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure it's inquiries have been made. We will expect the sponsors. Just to make a ride on this issue about the multi-year visa. If a multi-year visa is given to an individual, and then the individual behaves correctly for the, say the tenure, behaves correctly for 2 years or 3 years, and he changes to be a crook while having this multi-year visa, which still has about 8 years for him to do that. And how do we monitor that when such data changes of this person holding a multi-year visa, then the visa status will be changed as well to respond to the current situation that you will be faced with. I think if there is any monitoring or a managerial way of actually looking at that, and then so that we don't, because you know, with business, as people run businesses, when they start getting into troubles of business, then they start to resort to other ways of business to recover themselves, and it may not be business that we'll be happy about, which will actually require that we review that data. How are we going to manage that if there is any plan or you'll have to, whether you'll work on it? Of course, is that as honorable members, we will desist from giving the department some sort of executive orders. Giving executive orders. I mean, all what we usually do is to the things that we are worried about, we will require the department to tell us how are they going to use it, and we assess their response. Thanks. You may proceed, Minister, and whoever you delegate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, for your extensive comments. For your extensive comments and questions. We appreciate the robustness of the engagement, and hopefully the robustness of the response will equally be appreciated on the same measure. It is true, Honorable Hussein, that we said the biometrics plan had been in place since 2009. But as you would know, certainly you don't, you couldn't implement it before you amend the legislation, because the Immigration Act needed first to allow for the taking of biometrics before you could start undertaking that process. But secondly, as I said, so you can't put anything in your budget unless the legislation is available providing for you to implement that program. And once you've done that, you put in the regulations, and from there you operationalize the legislation. You then put the operational plan into your midterm strategic framework. You then budget for it and you start implementing. And that's why, while the plan has been there, you couldn't implement it until the legislation is available. Visa facilitation services is providing a multifarious of services to the department, both within the country and externally. You see, for example, we've opened an office, we've opened about 3 offices in the United Kingdom, which had a visa exemption. Now, this is not a signal that you are going to reverse the decision for visa exemption, but you are accommodating for the fact that you have in the UK a number of British citizens who apply for all sorts of long-term visas to South Africa. So those who are traveling on a 30-day tourism and other for other purposes, except, of course, the holders of the diplomatic and official passports on whom we have imposed a visa requirement. But the ordinary passport holders in the UK still have their visa exemption. But should they intend to apply for a long-term visa, which is your temporary residence visa, work, business, corporate, intra-company transfer, and those types of visas, they then need to go to VFS to apply for these visas there. Because if you go to London, to the South African High Commission, or if you went to London at the South African High Commission before we opened the Visa Facilitation Center in London, you would see a long queue stretching right into the street. We've taken away that inconvenience from the applicants and provide them now a service at a convenient office where they can be served in more comfortable environs without them having to queue on the streets and other such stuff. And the same would apply, for example, to Botswana, to Lesotho. It is to facilitate for those who are applying for temporary residence permits longer than 30 days so that they can be serviced properly in more convenient environs. You certainly need to do that because, and that's the argument we've been making, because you need to be rigorous in verifying a person who intends to live in your country on a long-term basis. And that is why we've been saying, we said in the current regulations, you cannot come to South Africa on a travel visa, on a tourism visa, and whilst in South Africa change your status to a long-term visa. Must not happen. Because we need to check a whole range of things that many of the people who applied for such visas were trying to circumvent. We had an instance in one company in Nelson Mandela Bay, Nelson Mandela Metro. They wrote us a letter in 2014 saying to us, they've got thousands of workers who now have to leave the country, go back to their countries of origin to apply for work visas. When we asked, but why, we found out that those thousands of workers had entered the country as tourists. And then the process took away thousands of jobs we could have been occupied by South Africans and denied South Africans an opportunity to be trained on that job. Because they deceived the country when they entered. They knew. But I don't think there's anybody who said, I'm coming to visit Robben Island and I'll go spend a day on Table Mountain and then I go to a game reserve. And once they are here, they say, here is the job opportunity. Let me apply for it. Let me get it actually within this short period of time. When you come here claiming to be a tourist and you are coming to get a job, you know from the outset. But we're trying to circumvent our Immigration Act and regulations. Now, we sit with this company and say to them, but what you did was wrong. But now we must give consideration to the fact that if these thousands of workers leave, the company may have to temporarily shut down. Even the few South Africans employed might have to be affected by that decision. So we have to waive the requirements for these employees to continue working. But it's something we must never allow. And that's why you have the VFS facilities abroad, except in countries where they still require visas, like India, where you then provide that full gamut of service, both for tourism as well as for temporary residence visas. So people, the biometric capture at the airport will not apply to anybody who intends to come to South Africa on a temporary residence visa. Do not apply. We will have to capture your biometrics in the country of origin, where you submit your full documents, including your financial records, your criminal records, that's your police records, and stuff like that. We will take it there, so that by the time you move to South Africa, we already know who you are. Then, you ask the question, you make a firm determination that tourism has been damaged, but the country has been safe. And I think that is the issue at all times that we need to bear in mind. Tourism is not the only consideration when you apply and implement these regulations. I don't think that the people of Paris still have the same romantic view of tourism after what happened in Paris last year. We must not be naive. We need to bear in mind that in coming up with an immigration act, otherwise you could just as well take a decision that scrap immigration services. Anybody who wants to come to South Africa must come. South Africa is open for tourists, for business, for criminals, for mass murderers, and anybody who may want to commit a malicious act against our people in the country. The reason you have an immigration act is to manage travelers into your country and minimize the risk that your country might experience as a result of people with malicious intent. Unfortunately, in the world in which we live, such risks have heightened. Every country is paying attention to the risks that may be posed by immigrants and travelers. And every country is taking steps to protect itself. And South Africa is no exception. We therefore need to take these decisions, which at the same time, because what happened, for example, on 9/11 in the US, imposed travel restrictions on every one of us. When I go to the US and I have to go there, I know many people who travel to the US frequently. They have absolutely no malicious intent against the United States and its people. But unfortunately, there are those few who do. And in order to protect and secure the United States against the few, the rest of us will go to the U.S., we must take our belts off, hang on to our pants, we'll take our shoes off, we must take our jackets off and fold them into some liquid bucket. It's the risk that, it's the unintended consequence that comes with trying to minimize the risks to your country whilst you continue to welcome tourists to your country. And in some instances, some countries such as Brazil did in 2012, they will respond in an equally vicious way and say, what you do to our nationals, we will do to yours when they visit our country. So, what I'm pleading for, colleagues, honorable members, is that we must have the all-round interest of the country, not parochial. Because where we see it as Home Affairs, we don't represent a particular parochial interest. We look at the interest of the country as a whole. And one, how the best do we attract tourists to South Africa without creating security problems? As D.G. McKay indicated, you deal with an instance where, and this is not the first instance, we dealt with another case last year, where about 12 or 9 people were coming from Syria. As they landed at O.R. Tambo International Airport, there was a court order to allow these people into the country. We didn't even have, we were not given a chance to answer, to oppose the application. We were not even given a chance to ask these people, who are you? Where do you come from? How long were you in that country? For what purpose were you there? And why are you back in South Africa? We were not given all that chance. There was a court decision, let them in. Now, when we see, we don't think that every tourist has the best interest of South Africa. I don't think that the people who were flying those aircraft in the United States on 9/11 had the best interest of Americans at heart. They may have come into the U.S. as tourists, as students, or something else, but the crime they committed against the American people lives with us even today and affects all of us. And South Africa must not be naive to believe that such may not happen to us. I don't think that the people of Kenya, the people of Tanzania, when they experience that hold up at the mall in Nairobi, had expected that those people were going to do that. And I think that we need to take steps such as are necessary, both to attract travelers to our country as well as to minimize the risk by taking steps that will be inconvenient for people who are traveling. It will affect all of us, but we need to be to keep an open mind that these steps are necessary. And I think the honorable members have spoken quite extensively as to the responsibility that we have, because South Africa must not believe that simply because we are South Africa, then there is nobody who wants to do something wrong. There was somebody who left their country, came to our country, went to Sentin, entered a private apartment, killed somebody in there, left South Africa. But that person could have come to Sentin Mall and committed a heinous crime against South African people. What were we going to say? What were we going to say? That government was kidnapping. Now, having said that, I don't think it's the department, Honorable Hussein, that gave mixed messages. We were very clear from the outset, and we still are clear right now. These visa regulations are in place. You will not come to our country unless we allow you to. The steps that we have taken to mitigate potential unintended, as well as unintended consequences, have been taken only to the extent that their security robustness has been tested and found to be worth the risk. And that is why we did not remove the transit visas before they were biometric capture. We first had to have biometric capture, then we could remove the transit visa. Otherwise, the transit visas would still be enforced. And that's why I would be saying, with regard to the accredited tourism companies from India and Russia, we will only accredit them once the Department of Tourism has satisfied itself as to their validity. And that's why we are saying we will not declare anybody who claims to be a business person and issue them with a multiple entry visa. We must first satisfy ourselves that you are a business person. We're clear there. There is no doubt. The department is clear. You want to leave the country with a child, carry an unabridged birth certificate. It's not us who created uncertainty. You say, amongst others, it. We didn't create any uncertainty as to the visa regulations. We were clear what they were about, and what we sought to achieve with them. That is why the issue of the minor passport, the changes to the minor passport, doesn't create uncertainty. It must not confuse anyone. We will announce when that minor passport can now be applied for. And like as it happens with all the passports and ID documents, when you change your document, you announce and people must apply and change the document. Because once you have a minor passport which includes the details of the parent, that minor passport will therefore be available to all South Africans. And we will not say to South Africans, willy-nilly, now the passport for your child that you have is no longer applicable. It will remain in force, working alongside the unabridged birth certificate until it expires. And then when you apply for a new one, it will come with the new details. Except in the case of parents who have never had a minor passport, I mean for their children, or who, because the passport has lapsed or is now full, they need to apply for a new one. In that case, yes, they will get a new passport. But for those whose children's passports remain valid for a considerable period of time, those passports will be valid working alongside the unabridged birth certificate until such time that they have to apply for a new one. Sir, leadership is about taking decisions and sticking by them. And listening, yes, we listened. I think I'm on record as having said, we will listen, we will consult, we will implement changes where necessary and where we think the risk is minimal or can be minimized. And even went to an extent of saying to the tourism industry that come up with proposals that we can look at and implement that will assist us to meet your requirements. We even went further. I appointed a ministerial committee on visas that looked at the different visas in South Africa and advised us on what to do. By the time the IMC was appointed, that ministerial committee had put forward their proposals to us. We had looked at them, satisfied ourselves. That's where all these decisions about the accredited tourism company come in, the issues that, a number of issues that are already contained here, that's where they all come, that's where they all come from. And that's what we are implementing. And that's why it was easy for us, as soon as the IMC was established, to present comprehensive proposals to the IMC that were all adopted, and we've even gone further than the decisions of the IMC. The IMC has said, give African academics and business people a long-term multiple entry visa of between 3 months and 3 years. We said actually 10 years. That's because we had done our work right before, prior to even the establishment of the IMC, which was therefore helpful to the IMC and the process that was led by His Excellency the Deputy President. The damage must be repaired. Actually, I don't think there is a damage. If there is any, it must be repaired by all of us, especially those who created the uncertainty. We, from the Department of Home Affairs, were very clear from the outset. We're trying to balance economic and security interests. And we remain on that note. The department did the impact assessment. The visa regulation cannot be passed until they have been approved by the Immigration Advisory Board. It's made up of legal experts on immigration, of business people, labor, and officials of various government departments. It was them who made these proposals to us. We looked at them, we approved them, and so they did the necessary impact assessment and advised us accordingly, and we accepted the proposals they presented to us. The issue of single parents is going to be resolved hopefully soon. As Mr. Rasmus indicated, there is a process already underway to find means to help address the concerns, particularly of a single parent. But I want to clarify this point too. First and foremost, when somebody provides a letter of consent, they must provide a copy of their passport, a copy of their ID, both of which must be attached to the letter of consent so that we are clear that you are the parent of this child. What the department rejected, and we will continue to reject, is a proposal that any person arriving with a child that bears the same surname as them must be considered a parent to that child. That's nonsense. Can't accept that. My nephew is a Gigaba, but my nephew is not my child. If you want to know the parents of my nephew, you must talk to the parents of my nephew. The fact that I'm Gigaba and my nephew is Gigaba doesn't mean that I'm a parent. In a cultural way, yes, I am a parent, but in a technical legal way, I'm not a parent. I cannot write a letter of consent, and it must end there. But there are instances, Honorable Philippe, where the father or the mother is absent and has never been there and was never registered. And that's where sometimes the confusion emerges. If I'm an absentee father and has never been registered on my child's birth certificate, the mother of the child must not now start going to pick me up so that I come to provide consent for my child to travel. I have no right. If the absentee father or the absentee mother certainly wants to be included in the child's birth record, they must resolve that thing alone as the parents are not involved in the department. In the far as well content, if the mother comes and the child's unapproved birth certificate only meets the mother as the parent of this child, we will not ask you where the father of the child is. It's not our business. There are many other mothers. You go to hospitals to issue birth certificate. You find on the application form and ultimately on the birth certificate, the mother has listed herself alone as the parent of the child. It's not our duty to ask who is the father of this child or where they are. The matter is resolved amongst the family and will accept that unabridged birth certificate. The problem arises if the father or the mother is also listed, in which case that's the process that we are trying to resolve through the family advocate, so that we can have a simpler, quicker process of taking a decision which is either less or not costly to the other parent. I think Mr. Rasmus and Mr. McKay will answer the question whether we have ever been ordered by court to return a child or we have ever had court set against us. With regards to the Chinese, I think we've only done for the Chinese that which is necessary to do for a region which is already sending large numbers of travelers to your country and which also has a potential of sending even more. Many countries in the world are competing for Chinese tourists, and South Africa must also do. And so the decision is that everything we've done for China is within the context of both current status and future prospects, as well as within the context of the BRIC program. Insofar as any other things, such as long-term visas and so on, the same regulations apply to them, and there's no special treatment for the Chinese in that regard. Whatever risks emanate from China are being dealt with within the existing regulations, and we think that the regulations are robust enough to deal with that challenge. The challenge with regard to South African borders, the statement Honorable Kumede raised, is a real challenge. South Africa attracts large mixed migration flows. Many of them try to enter the country irregularly without documents, away from the ports of entry, and it's a responsibility we have at the present moment, working through the South African National Defense Force, and in the near future working through the Border Management Agency. We will continue improving our efforts, both personnel and the technology to manage our borders. The issues that pertain to not only the border line itself, but also some parts of Asia, such as, you know, the issues that were raised in the report of the joint portfolio committees last year around Pongola. Those issues are being dealt with. Some of those are contained in the research the department did, which directed us as to where to open community border crossings so that we are able to manage the movement, especially between South Africa and our neighbors. In the long run, one of the issues we're discussing with our colleagues in Lesotho is the importance of establishing a credible database of their population with names, surnames, ID numbers, and biometrics. Because in the long run, if and when Lesotho has completed this process, and they are saying that they are about 70% plus closer towards completion of the process of establishing the national population register, we should be able to free movement. In the long run, we should be able to free movement. But it cannot be done in the absence of certain conditions being fulfilled. We could enable us, in case we find a crime scene with fingerprints which cannot be matched in South Africa, we should be able to send those fingerprints to any of our neighboring countries for matching, so that we have a sense of whose fingerprints are these. And that's why we are implementing the programs we are implementing with the Lesotho. And there is a number of other countries where such might be easy, but one of the biggest problems on the African continent is the absence of national population registers or civic registration. It's an enormous challenge. And that's a challenge that we are engaging through the African Union, led by the chairperson of the AU Commission. Some airlines, Honorable Chair, all airlines will still require an unabridged birth certificate. I think that's the same issue that Mr. Idris Elba faced last year when he was asked to provide unabridged birth certificate for his daughter and a letter of consent from the mother, and leading to him cancelling the trip instead of obtaining the documents required. Because the advisory note is not yet being implemented. There are two conditions towards implementing it. One is fulfilling the legal requirement. We need to ensure, we had to consult legally to ensure that such an advisory note would stand, would be effective. And secondly, the Immigration Advisory Board, which is close to establishment, because the term of the previous IAB expired and we are in the process of establishing another one. Once established, they will then consult, they will establish, amend the regulation, and then once they've done that, we will adopt the regulation and start implementing it. So, yes, the airlines will still require all these documents, including from visa exempt countries, until such a time as the legal requirement has been fulfilled. Honorable Chair, I think on addressing security, I've addressed also the issues raised by Honorable Raput. With regard to the people who commit crime, whether they are on any visa, once you commit a crime, the police give you a criminal record. We review your entire status in the country. If you may be here on a temporary residence permit, you may be here on a Zimbabwe special permit, or the soon to be established Lesotho special permit, once you've committed a crime. And that's why we're saying those who have criminal records will not qualify for the Lesotho Special Permit. They did not qualify for the Zimbabwe Special Permit. Even when that status has been granted to you, we will withdraw it. So, this is with regard to those who commit crime. Now, I don't know there if there's any question that we have left out.
You have done damage to all the questions, and none is left, actually. Unless if there is just some technical clarity that your officers would like to make, and you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to elaborate a bit further and speak to what Honourable was saying in ancient now, we've got two flip sides of the point. With regard to cases, we've got a case, it's still on our book, it's pending, where we were sued for damages. This was prior to the introduction of what we now have, the unabridged birth certificate that the parents have in their possession when they're traveling with their children. What happened in this regard is the child also left the country without the, I'm not going to, because it's still sub judice, the other parent's permission, because a passport was issued. That parent is now suing the department for damages incurred in order to try and find the child wherever the child was in the country. That's the one side. As of recent, we just had a case now where we were being held, where it was said that the department is holding certain children at ransom in South Africa because of the newly introduced regulations. That's the other side of the coin. But the court accepted the department's argument at the end of the day to indicate that there are other avenues available to the parent that is seeking the permission of the other parent that's refusing it. In order to approach court and say the court then steps into the shoes of the parent refusing to grant that specific permission. Why is it that, why does it happen in that specific manner? If a department should, based on information that they receive, grant that yes, you can, let's give the child, or the go-ahead that the child can leave, and it is found out later on that you did not have enough grounds, not enough of any investigations were done, etc. We'll go back to what we had previously, the department will be sued for damages at the end of the day. So, it's and what he's saying is we want to balance it, and the court, as the upper guardian of all minor children, must make that call at the end of the day, as we have indicated. Currently, there are bits afoot where we are discussing with the Department of Justice and other relevant role players like the DED, Department of Social Development, who are they working on the implementation of the Children's Act. Now, look at the Children's Act as well. The Children's Act makes it very clear as to a parent that's got sole guardianship of a child can give permission without the parent's permission isn't having to be obtained. But in that space as well, there's a court order and stuff that's necessary. So the courts are the upper guardian of all minor children. As I indicated earlier, if you look at the role that the Department of Justice plays in this regard as far as the family advocate is concerned, they do the necessary investigations by engaging with the parents, etc., to find out what they said. That report is then drawn up, and that is then sent to court to make the specific order based on the information gathered. Furthermore, having said this, that is an area of responsibility, or that is an area that falls within the responsibility of DfE and the Department of Justice. So Home Affairs can't go on their own. We're trying to engage with all the relevant role players to see how we can come up with something. Obviously, that will be communicated whenever the time is right to do so. It might even require amendments to legislation or regulation, whatever the case may be. But we can't speak on behalf of the Department of Justice or of DfE at this point in time. Depending on what comes out of the discussions, will be further. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted to get off this one so that we get the next part of the
presentation. Yeah, I beg your indulgence. I don't think that the question was quite clearly, and my question was simply this. Has there been any order, cost order, against the department because a single parent has taken the child out of the country? Because I get the impression from your answer is that there is a case pending, that the department is being sued. Because the argument is we have to prevent it. So is there an order from the court that says, look, you have a responsibility to do this, or you have had to pay R1 million, for example, because you didn't have the legislation on this?
Yeah, I think it has been responded that there are two cases, but they are on the other side of the coin. One is that there is a parent that says, you allow my child to go somewhere else. Then you must pay. Then the other one says, you are holding my children at ransom to do X, Y, Z because of your rules. So it's both sides. It's, that's what I bet. Is that we've got problems from both sides.
But they are paying.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the computer. That is saying.
I'm happy.
You look to be heavy, but I'm not seeing the smile. I know it's a good man.
I can't smile like you.
No, thank you very much. He's a good man. He just needs to be given a platform. But you must have managed him not to talk the whole day. Can we then, honorable members, please, Mr. McKay, then, to get to the next presentation? Ordinarily, it looks like honorable members will definitely have to postpone our era of minutes, because you've got 10 sets of minutes that will need almost half the day of the whole day. And then we'll have to move it to another day, the following day, and then allow the presentation to come in. We are now in our last 55 minutes. And you must receive the presentation and interact with it within these 55 minutes. And then the more you can save our time, the better. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I will go straight to the issues that the Portfolio Committee wants to discuss or have a briefing on, and that is the statistics. So I'll move straight to slide 6. I think it should be slide 6. If we have a look, Chairperson, at slide 6, this gives the movement for the period the 1st of December 2015 to the 7th of January 2016. This is the festive season period when we get the highest flows, inflows historically of people into South Africa during this time, in and out of South Africa, and during the Easter period. So for this particular festive season period, we received a total of 5.3 million tourists that visited South Africa during this particular period, 1st December to 7th January 2016, of which 1.4, Chairperson, we could say just under 1.5 million citizens, and the rest, 3.9 million are foreigners that visited South Africa during this particular time. If we go to the next slide and we have a look at the year-on-year comparison, we will see that during the same period in December 2013, we had 5.1 million visitors or movements, and during the 1st December, 7th January 2015, we had 5.1 million, and during December 2015 to 7th January 2016, we had 5.3 million, which shows an increased chairperson of visitors to South Africa. If we also have a look at the next slide, or the increasing volumes in terms of arrivals is 7% growth from the previous 2014-2015 period that we had. And this 7% growth is for foreigners, and there is a 0.3% growth for citizens that had either left and entered the country during this particular time.
Chair, just to draw the attention of honorable members to the column written foreigners, because let's say, for example, you ignore South Africans, the citizens, arrivals and departure, and go to foreigners, you look at the category of departures, arrivals, where you have 1.8 million arrivals in 2013-2014, 1.872 million arrivals in 2014-2015, which is an increase on the previous year. Bear in mind that all along we've been told that there was a drop in the number of foreign travelers in 2014-2015. In actual fact, that's not true. There was an increase, slight, but there was. But then if you go to 2015-2016, the number increases to over 2 million. This then accounts for the 7% increase in terms of the arrivals of foreigners, of foreign nationals, in the period between 1 December 2015 and 7 January 2016, which has rather been confirmed for the whole year by the Statistics South Africa. I just thought I needed to emphasize this so that we can see the progress that we are talking about.
Thank you, Jefferson. The following slide just talks to foreign miners during this particular period. We had the arrivals of 146,649 arrivals during this period of foreign miners into the country, and departures of 127,542. So this also shows that there were a lot of miners that visited, in spite of the requirement for unabridged birth certificate, that all of them complied during this period, or most of them complied during this period. With regard to the next slide, just talks to the top 10 ports that we have, and again, Oua Tambo, Oliver Tambo International Airport is our biggest port, carries the biggest volume during this particular period. It carried just over 1 million travelers, followed by Beitbridge of just under 1 million travelers, and then our so this year we show our top 10 ports in terms of volume that they carry. Chairperson, the next slide on citizen miners, because they are also affected by the unabridged birth certificate requirement. We had 79,545 arrivals of citizen miners, 104,258 of them departed during the same period. And if we have a look at the movement per region, we would see, as historically, that our biggest movement are Africans to South Africa, which accounts to 4.6 million, and then followed by the European countries, 367,982, and those would be for Asia, 91,955, from North America, 89,389, South America, 49,043, and Australasia, 34,787, and the Middle East, 12,775. Movements per region during this period. Chairperson, with regard to arrival, that's just a further breakdown, Chair, of the statistics that I had just given. So from the period 1st December 2014 to 7 January 2016 show increases of 4.9% travelers from our continent, 6.1% from Europe, 7.8% from North America, 15% from Asia, 2.5% from Australasia, 21% from Middle East, and a decrease of 1% for arrivals from South America. That is the only continent that we have received less travelers, 1% less travelers, and that is South America. Indeed. Of course, there are also, I suppose, reasons for that in terms of them being hardest hit by the world economic crisis that everyone is currently facing. Again, that's just the top 10 ports. Then, a person we thought we would also bring to your attention, the refused miners during this period. For arrivals, we had refused 80 citizens. Now, in this case, Jefferson, it would be South African children traveling with South African passports, but their parents having foreign passports. So, where the parent is refused, the parent would take his children with his or her children with them. So most of them would be refusals of of the parent instead of the child that has been refused, but they are refused as a family unit. Normally we would not refuse any South African entry to the country. We can't really refuse a South African entry into the country if he or she carries a South African passport and he or she indeed is a South African citizen, unless it has been fraudulently obtained or otherwise. With regard to departures, there were 2,673 of them that had been refused, meaning that they did not have the requisite authorization to travel. The foreigners would be on arrival were the most that were refused entry. We had 1,443 and 209 that were refused on departure. If we have a look at the number of refusals as per, in comparison with the number of travelers, it makes it a very small percentage of refusals. Chairperson, I think I will stop there because it deals with basically with the statistics during the census, during the census period.
I would have loved you to speak the challenges experience. You should speak to that.
Thank you.
Yes.
During the, and we are reporting the current period as I said in my when I started the presentation for the period of 70, of 1st December to 7th January 2016. As much as operations were completed very well, there were a number of challenges that had the potential of undermining efforts in the ports of Envy landscape, which include the Kilometer 4 deployments at Libombo. Kilometer 4, Jefferson, during this particular period and all periods, festive season periods, we have an agreement with the government of Mozambique that we would have joint clearance processes during that particular period of time. So that means outgoing, that means before Christmas, we would have joint operations or joint clearance processes that are held on South African soil at what we call kilometer 7. That would be at a old disused airport in Libombo, and we would do joint clearances over there, all the buses, the taxis, the large conveyances. So the immigration officials from Mozambique would come over and do clearances on South African soil. After the Christmas period and the movement back into South Africa, we then moved that operation to the Mozambican side. Yes. And on that particular area, we drew the clearance as well. And there were some issues that were raised by our staff in this particular issue. One is, would they be covered in terms of insurance? What if they, practical issues, I think that all staff would be concerned about. What if they are involved in an accident while they're on the other side? What if they are attacked while they are working there? And we needed to clear such issues with them before their deployment, or deployment there. So operationally we were able to resolve these particular issues. But it is raised here. So we're entering into a new, in fact, in a week's time, we're starting new operations. We are into our Easter festive season. So this allowed us as well to review and to see that we deal with these issues now in March when Easter comes up. And then there was a serious issue of absenteeism at Ortia. Our minister visited Ortia because of complaints of long turnaround times at our queues. And during that particular visit, this was highlighted to the minister in terms of absenteeism at Ortia. And minister has, at Oar Tambo, the minister has given us instruction on how to deal with that particular issue. We find here as well, Chairperson, that this normally happens over weekends, and it normally happens when there's a night shift. That we have high absenteeism at Oar Tambo. We have put in place a whole team, a departmental team that is headed by our HR department that's currently looking at these particular and doing an intervention at Overtambo to deal and curb absenteeism. And we hope going into this festive season that we will not have a similar problem at Overtambo. And then Chairperson, lack of sufficient staff, I think this is the lament of Home Affairs, that we just don't have enough staff to be able to do what is expected of us. We just don't have, every time that we have these types of operations during Easter and Christmas, we have to redeploy people from other units in the department to come and assist us at the ports of entry because of the high volumes that we receive. And then support by IT in some areas like Libombo. We are now having on-site teams that are able to do immediate intervention in the cases of breakdown, IT breakdown. And we now have involved our travel agency to assist us for booking, because it's a major operation to redeploy or deploy staff during this particular period of time. Your logistics need to be spot on, because you need to move people all over South Africa to particular areas at port of entry where you do not necessarily have hotels, you do not have guest houses in some cases, so you need to go. It's a huge operation, and we now have our travel agency that is supporting us in that particular area. And then, Chair, just some factors that contributed to this successful operation. We had, of course, the support by our learning.
I'll request you to leave that one.
Thank you, Chair.
That one, I wanted the challenges, because that's where we may need to assist if we have got other views to make inputs. And as you have done that, I think that the rest we should be able to read on ourselves, because it's things that we must celebrate. Honorable members, I think the issue of statistics then has been put in place in front of us. We are now aware of the level of compliance to our regime by people that are visiting the country, and also our own people that are visiting other countries. The level of compliance, and also of course the issue that relates to the issue of tourism or whatever, that the numbers have gone down in crisis, shows differently. And the issues that have actually affected, but the department got plans, they are talking to issues that of dealing with all those things and the challenges. Is there anything that you want to raise? Mekenye, you have not been speaking since morning. And then Mamnisi, you have not been speaking this morning. Then in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Is that we don't want to speak for the sake of speaking. In fact, what we're supposed to speak is the value and the content of what we can speak on. So that is why we hear our voice today. I want to, yes, now that the DDG has just ended on the issue, I have this question, but maybe I can just add something that I also want to need to hear. On page 7, coupled with page 15, noting that interest during service season did increase, yes, I understand. Now you have tried to elaborate on that. Because I'm concerned if you have your records, but I just want to check if there was also an increase from our own staff, not necessarily from the other countries, on our own staff on the press entries. And also, are there any incentives did they get during that, on that record, during that period? Secondly, having also had a shortage of equipment in some areas. If you compare us as last week, we told that you got 10 computers. Now, the network problem is that unsubstantiated on the previous presentation. Now, how were the services, therefore, noting the shortage you already have of equipment, of IT equipment? On page 14, we talk about the risk. This is a lot of minus. As a family unit. Now, it reminded me of the submission of the Commission of gender Equality and on the bill, when they have a concern about the negative impact on the separation of the family. Now my question is, what is the position of the department on that issue? Also, on this slide, on this page 15, we talked about absolutism. Yes, we did elaborate on what is happening, but I always had this question. Were there any disciplinary measures towards those absolutism during this critical period? Because I don't understand how the staff can be absent for us in a very critical period of the festive season, which all we know that it brings a lot of self of work for us. Lastly, on the last page, also on page 15, the stakeholder cooperation, especially BCOCC's leadership. What are the real challenges experienced from this leadership? What are the real challenges that you explain to us? Not just to blanket it that you have the challenge which you don't understand how they didn't cooperate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would like to also thank the Minister and the team. We really appreciate that you have done much work, and we know that there is still much to be done. Of course, only three questions to make. Chairperson, I would like to get clarity from the department. If there are administrative or other reasons why there was significantly lower refugee status approval that happened after April 2015. And Chairperson, also to check from the department what is the total backlog of refugee status determination with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I wouldn't have loved to give this afterthought, but it looks like majority of you now you have got afterthoughts, starting with the Honorable Tope. You know, I just need to be wary about the time of them to respond so that you are listened before 1 o'clock. Honorable Tope.
Thank you, Chair. No, thanks for coming this evening. And I can see that the Minister is very, very happy about the but it does not mean that Minister, we must implement the wrong policies. Although the statistics, it's going up. On page 14 here, I'm very puzzled. I don't see Devon. Is it a mistake, Honorable DPG? The top 10 port by room 1 December 2016 to 2012 General 2015, Devon PE. On your way forward, on the first document, you have indicated that those facilitation centers will be also in Devon and PE, plus 17 one. So now that earlier presentation does not talk to this one on the statistics. I'm very worried. I just want to get a clarity. Thank you.
That's a big left.
Thank you very much. Today, those who never spoke. But you were also going to mention my name. I just want to say thank you very much to the Minister. For the first time I saw in the committee, I think we see the year of delivery. This thing is going to come better. The concern that I wanted to raise in the last meeting that we had with the HU about the biometrics, it's on the network. I think there's supposed to be a communication between the Minister of Communication and your department. I just wanted to get a clarity on that. Thank you very much.
That's a good followed by Rafuti, and then Nancy will be the second from the last.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Now, my question is, on foreign arrivals, do you make a distinction between tourist arrivals and foreign arrivals? And then if not, are you working in collaboration with states, South Africa, and bodies that monitor tourist arrivals? That's the first one. The second one is around Mm-hmm. Are you having any challenges or around the scarcity policy, particularly looking at the waiver or at the bitter waiver, whether it leads to the detriment of the numbers of people coming, tourists coming to South Africa? And I won't ask on staff because we've got it on. Most probably, we have that on our PRR.
Thank you very much. I'm here. I've been listening very carefully. Minister, I understand. And looking almost everything that has been said here. I do have questions. But in the process, my questions are being answered. Also, the most serious questions that I had is South African-Chinese relations. I do understand the background and whatever. But I've got experience with them. Yes, I've got the embassy here. Whenever we go there at RCC, normally in Dinan, he's dealing with them now. They refuse every time because the visas must be done here before he goes to China. So I have to change everything now and again. But when you were talking, explaining, I was not sure what are we talking about, because even if you are going to London, everything you must done here in South Africa. But now, when I'm trying to say, what are you doing as a department, in fact, as a government, I'm realizing that in the Freedom Charter, we said we want to lead the peace in the world. So by coming with your own arrangements, ensuring that you are making South Africa accessible to everyone, not looking at what is being done like US, you have made an example like Americans. And I please understand what I was not happy about the Chinese. But my main worry is there was a plane which flew, I don't know where it was coming from. And it landed up in Zimbabwe because it was refused in Kinshasa Airport. And there was a corpse in that plane. We had 20 billion inside the plane. Now, what I want to understand, it is things of force of entry. I ask me from you now to hear from you, how did it came in here? And remember, all what I'm trying to ask is based on the security of the country. How did that thing came in here? And all things, how did all these things happen? And equally, there are other planes which are getting into OR Tambo and be sorted in there and fly again to these game reserves. How do you, as the Department of Home Affairs, make sure that those people are being checked properly so that you know what is inside there? As I'm referring to you, that plane with the body and 20 kilo. After it came in, because it means you didn't know what was inside. My main worry is you can be able to help me on this side of security. This issue of tourism, I do understand, but I would love to ask you about this here, because sometimes you can ask you. But I would love to, because the minister says they are happy with it. Well, if it's true as well, the statistics are telling me that when everything is going fine, I could see the Africans, the children, the miners there, and I met it because I know three of them were in my house. So I said, no, it's fine, because my son is relating very well with Africans. So thank you very much for all the processes that came about this situation part of.
Okay. What's that? Have we jumped you? Yes, proceed.
Can see I would just like to ask two questions. The first question is an addition on the plane which landed in Zimbabwe with the Jacobs. I understand South Africa actually informed Zimbabwe, you know, not to touch the plane and all that, so it means that you know something about it. If you could inform more about that plane, that would help us. And how can a person, one person, who actually died or was found dead with so much money. Secondly, Chairperson, I just wanted confirmation that the report, our oversight report, when we visited some certain ports of entry and certain places, if it ever reached to the minister and his team, because we also came up with recommendations over certain areas. I know we had one area on challenges here. This is the area on the support by traveling agencies for booking for self-employment. One of the issues which we wrote in our report, it was the deplorable conditions, housing conditions which we found in some of the areas. So I'm just asking myself that, do we talk to each other? Do we know what the left is doing from the right, in the sense that that report of ours, where we went on visits to certain areas, was actually sent for? Because if it was, I would have liked to see some of the challenges being addressed here, because it was a comprehensive report. We took days with our chairperson going out and addressing matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Honorable Rafiki, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think the department is doing a failing job, especially for starting on time. But they started preparing this in July. And I think really our communities out there must know that this is not really something. They started in July, and you can see that they were well prepared. And they are, this is an authentic kind of step that they have given us. So we really want to thank you for that. Thank you. Some of us, we are optimistic, you know, optimistic individuals in life. We see the bright future. And it is unfortunate that Mr. Agustin is not here, because you can see the steps that are very high. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It looks like there's a point of up.
My apologies. I just want to hear the minister on this thing of lack of sufficient staff. It has been an outcry from the department. It has been an outcry. I think this is not the first time. There is no staff to support the department. I just want to hear from the minister. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I think it may be my opportunity as well to ask a question on page 7. Generally, every time when the department gives us statistics like this one, especially with the foreigners, the arrivals are more than the departures. The arrivals are more than the departures. And maybe there is an explanation that many comes in and they refuse to go, and any other reason. If there is any possible explanation why it is like that, but then Minister, it is correct. We have this outcry from the DG, from all the officials, about the lack of financial resources in the department. The budget is passed. The department is dealing with more than 52 million people in the country. Dealing with the current 52 million people, and also administer the past existence of those that have passed on, keeping their records, but the number of personnel that the department is having is even less than departments that deal with a fraction of South African society. Now, the biggest question is, what sort of strides can be made to convince the powers that be that this department be accorded the necessary recognition of the mandate it has to do, and also to be able to access resources, whether human resources or whatever, to be able to do that work. That's the first issue that I've just tried to raise. And the second one is that on other ICT work, the department depends on CETA because of a policy position. Because of a policy position, they can't deviate from using procedure, they can acquire other service providers that can assist them to be able to ensure that there is a continuous service delivery. It is almost prohibited by some other policy position within the cabinet. What is there that can be done to ensure that the department continues to have connectivity that is sustainable at all times, especially in relation to communication of information, of ID applications and all that to DPW, where we can ensure that there won't be downtime? And how is that possible that the department can be accorded the necessary support to be able to acquire other service provider if CEDA can't guarantee sustainability? The platform is yours. I know that some may be very difficult, but let's hear as far as you can respond.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will take all the easy questions and leave more difficult ones for the DPW. Yes, we increased during the festive and the Easter seasons. We increased our deployment to the busy ports of entry. We already have experience as to which ports of entry are busy, busiest during this period, and so we increased our deployment. One of the things we had not done was to also target Tambo International Airport. We realized this past December that we actually needed to. Because if I'm not mistaken, on the 17th of December, we received the largest number of arrivals at OR Tambo Airport in the history of the country. On one day, a record number of arrivals. When we visited OR Tambo, which was on a Sunday, we took a decision there and then to source out about 30 immigration officers that would be deployed to OR Tambo to report to work on the following Monday. We were able to raise about 27, 28, which assisted a great deal in improving service at OR Tambo. But we also began, as Mr. McKay was suggesting, to involve our ARP department to begin dealing with the cases of absenteeism, instituting disciplinary procedures. There was a day when you had about 32 absentees from work, which was an extraordinarily high number of absenteeism. When, after we had visited OR Tambo, we, in the subsequent days, we had a drastic improvement on many days of total attendance at work. So you can see that we're not dealing with sickness or some other, you were just dealing with discipline and poor management. You were dealing with poor management and discipline, and we're taking steps to address that particular issue. Colleagues, we remember that we have been having, since the resignation earlier in the year of the head of OR Tambo, we have been having an acting head. The permanent head is soon to be finalized, and so we should address that issue to get an experienced manager to take responsibility for OR Tambo International Airport. Because one of the problems that the department sits with, which owes in part to this lack of capacity, which I raised with the department in 2014, is the leadership of our course of entry. I asked for a review of the leadership, particularly of OR Tambo, Bay Bridge, Maseru, Vicksburg, Libombo, Oshu, because we have an anomaly. Whereas at Obatambo, you have a director heading our operation. At Big Bridge, which deals with almost the same volume, with perhaps more complex challenges, you have a deputy director heading the port of entry. And you have from other departments people who are senior to this level, and yet Home Affairs is the leader of the operation at the ports of entry. It makes the lines of accountability to be very difficult to maintain. So we are conducting a review, and the establishment of the border management agency will really assist us a great deal by moving all the disparate operators at the ports of entry and retaining the management of the ports of entry under one command in one organization, so that you can smooth the operation. Yes, there are incentives. The overtime arrangements are made in the budget of the department for these two periods. The equipment, you know, in any operation, you could never have enough equipment. You need to be able to make do with the equipment you have at your disposal to optimize. So, we accept that the country is experiencing fiscal challenges that we've all been asked to tighten our belts. And so, we cannot ask from government more than what we can be given. We are tightening our belts. We will try to make do with the resources we have until such a time as we can provide additional resources. Honorable members will remember that during the medium-term budget policy statement last year, in 2014, we were given additional 18 million. We were given additional resources to increase the number of immigration inspectors that we have. That will go a long way towards assisting us, but the challenges are going to remain. As the chair just indicated, the department is dealing with more challenges than it has been equipped for. So perhaps to just jump quickly to that issue, there are two decisions that cabinet has taken to assist the Department of Home Affairs. One is to declare the Department of Home Affairs now going forward is a security department. We now have been made a member of the JCPS cluster, which never happened before, which should therefore have an impact on our resources going forward, on our resourcing going forward. And in addition to which, we have been asked that at a later stage during the year, we must therefore provide a business case that addresses this decision and what would be the adequate level of resourcing for the Department of Home Affairs. And hopefully the resourcing issues, not that they will go away, but are going to improve. The second decision was to allow us to be exempted from CETA. But cabinet said, let us continue engaging with CETA. Now, as I said, colleagues, and I'm happy the honorable member is happy that I'm here, I'm also happy that he listened to me earlier. I don't think he did. When I said, the network at our port of entry is provided by us and is more reliable. The network from CETA is provided at our front offices, and that's where we have enormous challenges, problems. That's frustrating, but let me not get there. So we are dealing with SARS at the port of entry. The biggest problem we have at the port of entry is just the equipment itself, old computers. And we're trying to manage that to fix this, we have to procure more, and it's in our budget process to continuously do that, paying attention to these ports and to the subsidiaries. So these two decisions, to allow us to deviate from CETA and to declare as a security department, are going to help us a great deal in terms of resourcing. And going forward, we will benefit from this decision to declare as a security department, in that a number of other constraints which were imposed on us are going to be moved, that we would be able to sidestep a number of things. The issues of the BCOCC leadership and the challenges there, I'm sure, and the separation with regards to minors, I'm sure Mr. McKay will talk to that. With your permission, Chair, we wish to request not to answer the questions about refugees, because we didn't make a presentation on the matter. We want to come back and make a proper presentation, and then we can address those issues at that moment. Jeff and Port Elizabeth are actually not our top port of entry. They're not. PE in particular is. You know, we must take a decision on the designation of this international airport. PE is not an international airport. It was designated as an international airport for the purposes of the 2010 World Cup. We should have taken that status there. And a number of the airports need to have that status first. Because you declare it an international airport, you must also deploy immigration officers there who sit and wait 365 days. This year it should be 366 days for no airline. No one is there in PE. The same would apply to Polokwane Gateway, a number of other international airports. They are just wrongfully designated as international airports. I'm not saying officially we will take their status. I'm saying, so that I'm not reported to have said, this is what we will do. I'm saying we need to review so that we can better deploy our resources to where they are required. In the future, Deben may join the top 10 because an increasing number of international airlines are now landing in Deben. But if you compare Deben with the top 10, at the present moment, it doesn't compare. And it is explained by the fact that the largest number of visitors to South Africa by far are Africans from the continent. And most of them don't use the airport. They drive through the airports of Asia. That's why your Maserus, your Fixbacks, your Oshooks have high numbers of travelers than even Deben would have, King Shaka International Airport. The issue of sufficient staff, as they say, is hopefully going to be addressed going forward. Both at civic service and immigration services, the department needs additional capacity. We sit with a challenge even now with regard to the program we're doing with the banks, the e-channel. The banks are going to provide us space, we'll install our equipment there. But where are you going to get these additional people who are going to provide that service to the bank? You are going to have to find them from somewhere. And recently, the department took a decision to take 10 officials from head office and send them to Eden Bay. And in approving that decision, I made a comment that this is well and good, but what we are not addressing is a comprehensive plan of staff deployment. Because if you go to if you go to Alberton Home Affairs office, you've got 10 service points that are unattended, unstaffed. Now, when clients walk into the office, they think that I'm sitting in a long queue, but there are 10 computers that have no good. Where are Home Affairs officials? You guys are lazy. You are not doing well. Probably they are having coffee somewhere or getting in the bedroom, and yet it's not the case. We just don't have the people to staff those to this point. So the department is trying to manage that situation in an environment where we've said to Public Works, we need more offices. We need to go to the rural areas. We need to have footprints in the rural areas so that you can provide a service there. Because at the present moment, even your offices, as you run back, they are small. You ideally should have bigger offices with more staff. But I'm raising it not to lament, but to explain that we understand the issues that honorable members are raising. We are attending to them, and hopefully with time, we will have a better capacity to provide a response. The issue of the network, honorable Phil, and I've responded to it, at least at the point of entry, a better resource. With regards to the distinction between travelers and tourists, honorable Kumete, we don't distinguish. The figures we are giving you are of travelers. Whether they are tourists or not tourists, somebody else might make that determination. But from where we see, we actually did. Because when a person fills in the arrival form, they indicate, maybe it's something that we need to do. But for now, we are just providing travel statistics, and we do work with SSA to ensure that we synchronize our statistics. The department has made a request to employ a statistician at chief director level to begin compiling the data, our statistics, and sorting them out, both civic and immigration services. We are in discussions with the TSA to finalize that. I didn't quite get the question about the scarce skills, but I'm sure McKay will respond to it. With regard to South Africa-China relations, I think Home Affairs finds itself in a catch-22 situation. Because on the one hand, when you do the things others are doing, you are being told you are destroying tourism. But it's what everybody is doing. But other countries, I guess, have more rights to do to us what we have no rights to do to them. But it's something for another date. But at the same time, I think on a more positive level, South Africa has a responsibility in these economic times to attract tourists, because it's a fact, it's a given fact. Tourists bring money, which creates jobs, which helps to drive the recovery of our economy. So we cannot sit back and sulk at that. But the British want a visa from us, but we have not asked for a visa from them. It's fine. Let them come. We'll capture their biometrics, we'll process them well here, and do what we think is necessary for our economy. There is never a guarantee, foolproof, that by relaxing your visa regulations, you will have more tourists. And neither is there a guarantee that by tightening them, you will secure your country. It's a balance you must strive for. The risks you must manage all the time. But yes, we want tourists, we want more tourists than we have. And that's why we must do. You know, if South Africa had 1.5 billion people, maybe we would be like China and not care that much, you know. But the fact is, we don't have 1.5 billion people. And so we need tourists. And that's why in our responses earlier we said, for us, the issue with China is both with regard to current status and future prospects. If you look at the numbers of tourists that arrived in South Africa during the first season from Southeast Asia, 15%, which was an increase from previous figures, it tells you that the steps we're taking to attract the Asians to South Africa as tourists and travelers are bearing fruit, and we must continue to do so. If they are strict with regard to us, in actual fact, it's not only us, it's with regard to any other country. It's fine. Their business, we're looking at ours. The plane that landed in Zimbabwe, I would request that we be not asked to comment about it. The investigations are ongoing, as the Department of Home Affairs, we really have very little information about this issue, including where did the corpse come from, whether when they landed in South Africa the corpse was there or not, and what's the money that's on the plane. I think relevant authorities will answer these questions at the right time. So the investigations are ongoing, the discussions between South Africa and Zimbabwe are ongoing. Insofar as we are concerned, we request that we wait for that moment where the relevant institutions are ready to answer those questions. The report, Mangomo, from the Portfolio Committee's visit to ports of entry would not find itself in this report, particularly because the report deals with a period after, and it deals with a specific issue. How many people traveled to South Africa between 1 December and 7 January? When we come back to deal with our management of the ports of entry, we will address those issues. I think in my previous responses to our earlier discussion on visa regulation, I did indicate that we had noted the issues raised in the portfolio committee visit, and the suggestions being made. And part of what we will do in some of those ports of entry is to both improve the management as well as establish community border crossings, because there are areas where even these 72 ports of entry that we have, we need to review them and reduce them and ensure that we have manageable ports of entry, we convert others into community border crossings and manage them better with requisite resources. The question that the chair asked about arrivals vis-a-vis departure, I actually think South Africa should be happy if the arrivals exceed departures. We would be worried if people were leaving the country and few were coming back, were visiting. The reason is that a person who is coming to visit is usually, there are few of those who come in for one day, getting out. Most of them would be coming in for 3 to 7 to 8 days. And so they enter and stay, compared to those who leave. Those who leave would be few. We always be fewer than those who arrive. And so it really doesn't concern us, because even when we look at the overstayers, the numbers are not staggering. The people who overstay are not that much. And in many instances, they will drive the cars, appeal their declaration as overstayers, provide valid reasons, and we would rescind their declaration as overstayers. So it's actually good that we have that large numbers of arrivals and fewer numbers of departures. Something we need to welcome. I think I have responded to the issue of financial and human resources, as well as the issue of the network and deviation from the body. Thank you. There are a few questions that Akay would respond to. Thank you.
Yeah, you may proceed if we could finish by whatever.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, there's not much. That the position around separation of family, the department is clear, we support family unity, and we will not separate families at all. But we also need to be wary that by saying that, that there is also an abuse of the system in terms of that, where we find more and more people applying for visas or permanent residence in South Africa based on the fact that they have South African children, not married, because we are clamping down on the marriage, fraudulent marriages. So what they are doing now, they are now children. I have a South African child, so I'm applying because of my South African child, because of reliance on the issue of family separation. So we can see how this, our laws impact. When it closes up here, they look for another area of exploitation and abuse. So most are now applying within that particular area. And our argument, our position is clear that we support family unity. And even in cases where family was, where children were separated, they were were refused entry, it was based on a whole family unit being either refused entry and not having the child enter and the parents not. We try to do that. The other issue is, what are the real challenges with DCOCs, as Honorable Kenya? The challenge is an operational one. Yes, like with any coordinating committee or organization, there's always problems during special occasions to coordinate adequately. So it's basically an operational matter that is resolved during the operation, but it's something that really is there every time when there's an operation, and we are seeking permanent solutions to some of the coordination or coordinating issues. Chairperson, I think those are really the only two issues that Minister left me to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think honourable members and all our visitors and those that are representing other committees that we have invited to be present today, we need really to thank the Minister and the Department for having provided us with a progress report on the implementation of the immigration regulations as reviewed or adapted by the IMC. And also appreciate the departmental actions that they have taken to actually implement this. And also appreciate the statistics that have actually been made public on the kind of work that they are doing at the ports of entry, the numbers of those that have been refused in terms of our regime, and the number of people that have actually complied to the regulations. And of course that we should all go out here that and make the call that all people that want to travel, whether traveling to South Africa or out of South Africa, it is important for them to comply with our rules and regulations. And also they must comply with the rules and regulations of the country they are visiting. Otherwise then you will pick up challenges big time. And I think we appreciate the progress that has been made, and the department should be encouraged to actually make more strides in normalizing some of these situations, and it should make more strides in improving the issue relating to personnel, make more strides in improving the situation relating to CEDA, to make sure that we are capable of discharging our responsibility in terms of delivery as we are expected. And we know those cabinet decisions that talks to CEDA and also the putting the department as a security department. We hope that the department should yield to those mandates that have been given. And thank you very much to all of us. And this meeting then is to end our chat. Thank you very much. Thank you.